This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A few years ago, New Hampshire adopted a new tourism slogan, live free and fill in the blank. And while some panned the new phrase as vague and indecisive, others said it perfectly fits why people come here for so many different reasons. The Granite State, perhaps more than any of its neighbors, has a mixed identity that the New England guidebooks sometimes struggle to describe. Are we NASCAR or the Great North Woods? Bike Week or Hike Week? Is it all about the White Mountains, the lakes, the coast, or the tax-free shopping? And don't forget those liquor stores. Today in The Exchange, what is New Hampshire's image, and does it need an upgrade, or is it just fine the way it is? Let's hear from you. If you're visiting the state right now, or you're a relative newcomer, what brings you here, and how do you think the rest of the country perceives the Granite State? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook. Send us a tweet. We have three guests in studio. Jeff Feingold is here, editor of New Hampshire Business Review. Jeff, thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Laura.
Also with us, Rick Broussard, editor of New Hampshire Magazine. Rick, welcome back. Good to see you.
Glad to be here, too.
And also with us, Jamie Trowbridge, president and CEO of Yankee Publishing, Inc. And Jamie, thanks for your time.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, all of you, I travel quite a bit around the country. And Rick Broussard, when I say I'm from New Hampshire, here's what I often get. Is that near Vermont?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Or is it in Massachusetts?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Why is that? You could argue that it's by design. And I think that it actually is. And by design, maybe I'm talking on sort of like the celestial level. Geography is destiny, you know, and we have a very short coast, and whereas Maine has a long one, and so does Massachusetts, longer than ours. And Vermont, well, it's got the Green Mountains and it's got cows. You know, it's agrarian. And New Hampshire somehow tucked in all of that, and it doesn't really have those geographic identities that the other states have. And that was the beginning of it. But it got more complicated after that as civilization progressed in the United States in America.
So geography is destiny. That's a great point.
Yeah. Yeah. The original settlers here, they didn't come, you know, for the scenic beauty. They came to fish. In fact, there's a great book by that name about Portsmouth, and it identifies the fact that the Isles of Shoals were this perfect little staging area for fishing. There's still a little village there that you can visit when you go to the Isles, which is like from the 1600s. It was before the Pilgrims. People were coming to the Isles to fish. And they wound up, of course, populating Boston because it had a better harbor. And they wound up vacationing in Maine because it had more beautiful coastlines. They came here for very practical purposes. And I think people still come here for very practical purposes. The practical purpose now is to get away from it all.
Yeah, I think Rick raises a really good point, because if you think about what the difference, the major difference between Vermont and New Hampshire goes back hundreds of years, and that's basically that Vermont's an agrarian economy. You can grow things there. You don't grow much in Granite. So New Hampshire doesn't really have as much of an agricultural history, but we do have an industrial heritage that starts way, way back. You just go to any town on the river, there's mills, and mills from the beginning. And, you know, they eventually became huge mills like the Amiskeag Mills or up at the Brown Paper Company up in Berlin. And, you know, that's really what New Hampshire is. New Hampshire's economy is an industrial economy, which doesn't lend itself as much to this vision of like we have as Vermont. And I'm not trying to say anything negative about Vermont. I live 30 miles from the border. It's a beautiful state. But it does have this agricultural heritage that lends itself more to this idea, this of this bucolic idea of a state. New Hampshire, not so much because, well, it's the Granite State.
So, Jeff, just speaking of economy, how important is tourism to New Hampshire's economy? It's big,
it's,
right?
It's huge. It's about $5 billion a year, and it's one of the it's an argument about how if it's the most if it's the major employer because there's so many part-time jobs, seasonal jobs, but it's one of the most important industries in New Hampshire by far. It's extremely important, especially in places in New Hampshire where there isn't as much as we can see in the North Country. Gets become even more dependent than ever on tourism.
Well, and Jeff, I started by talking about the reaction that I often get when I say I'm from New Hampshire. People often say, is that near Vermont? Or I'll say I'm from New Hampshire, and then later in the conversation they'll say, so in Vermont, do you? And I say, no. Yeah. New Hampshire. What sort of reaction do you get when you tell people you're from New Hampshire, from people, you know, far away?
Well, I'm from Brooklyn. And when I said I was going to New Hampshire, I said, where's that? I mean, and this is true. Like,
Brooklyn's not that far away.
I know it's not that far away, but it was really interesting because it was almost as if people in New York had no idea about New Hampshire. I'd say, you know, Lake Sunapee, what's that? Lake Winnipesaukee, they may have heard of. Portsmouth, probably. But, you know, I live up near Lake Sunapee, and it's kind of like, which I don't mind, to be honest with you. The fewer people know about it, it's better for the people who live locally, but it's interesting because when you think about the way New Hampshire has been promoted, a lot of the people who come to New Hampshire are from New England. They come to visit. They know about New Hampshire. They come up here for the skiing or for the lakes or for hiking. But in terms of the wider audience, the bigger market, it's become more of an attraction to people outside of New England. But it's still not as doesn't have that image in a lot of the other states, though.
Jamie, slightly different question for you. At Yankee Magazine, you guys are often writing sort of guidebook versions of the magazine to different New England states. So how have your guides, Jamie, described New Hampshire, especially in comparison to some of its neighbors, Massachusetts, Vermont, Maine?
Well, sometimes we organize the issue around the states, but really when we write about New England, we write about destinations, and we're careful to neglect political boundaries because, let's face it, that's not the way people really travel. You know, even the people who are going to Maine or Vermont might spend some time in New Hampshire while they're doing that. And so when we talk about destinations, one of them we survey our readers, and one of the most popular destinations or the ones they want to read most about are the White Mountains. That really is, I think, when people think of New Hampshire as a destination, if they don't have any other experience of coming here, they might think of the White Mountains. And, you know, when we survey readers, the White Mountains are in the top five. You know, you have Boston, which is, you know, just sort of like the no-brainer number one, and the Cape, the main coast, and the White Mountains.
Wow.
That's how it breaks down.
What else jumps out for New Hampshire in those surveys, Jamie?
Well, we don't really go into much greater depth with the surveys, but, you know, our coverage of New Hampshire, of course, extends way beyond the White Mountains.
Sure.
And there's so much, so many lakes in New Hampshire. I mean, you know, we think of the lakes region as being Squam and Winnipesaukee, but I live over in the Monadnock region. There's five lakes in every town.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, these glaciers came through here and scoured this state, and they left these really big, beautiful puddles for us to swim and boat in. And it's a huge part of the culture of New Hampshire is lakes, and we write about that with great frequency.
Yeah, we are very fortunate that way. I think 900 rivers, lakes, ponds for people to swim in. It's kind of a little hidden jewel about New Hampshire.
And this is another geography thing. You know, I mean, you cross that boundary into Vermont, you know, those people are swimming in the culverts. There are no lakes over there.
It is true. It's really interesting because New Hampshire does have so many more things that Vermont has little of. You know, we have the White Mountains, they have the Green Mountains, but, you know, the White Mountains are these massive, beautiful. I mean, I'm not saying anything negative about the Green Mountains. I know people are listening from Vermont.
I have to agree that there's a difference between the Green Mountains and the White Mountains in that the Green Mountains are a ridge, okay? So when you're in the Green Mountains, which are spectacular to climb, what you're looking at is a valley. You're looking off the mountain into the valley. And we were talking to this about the folks who run Ski New Hampshire, the Association of the Alpine and Nordic Ski Areas here. It's like, what's different between New Hampshire and Vermont when it comes to skiing? And the difference is that when you're skiing in the mountains of New Hampshire, you are in the mountains. You're looking out at other mountains. And it's distinctive.
Yep.
The phone number for you to join our conversation here in The Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Today in The Exchange, at the height of summer vacation season, we're looking at what New Hampshire's image is in the outside world. We'd love to hear from you. If you're visiting the state right now as a tourist, or you moved here from somewhere else, what brings you here? And do you think the rest of the country perceives the Granite State the same way that you do? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We'd love to hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And gentlemen, Steve from Nottingham is up first. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're in The Exchange.
Good morning.
Morning.
And I'm calling you as I look over on beautiful Lake Pawtuckaway. I can tell you that one of the great things is the lake, and it's my front lawn.
The lake is your front lawn, Steve. Wow.
Yes. So, in fact, I went kayaking before I talked to you this morning.
Oh, wow.
But well, what strikes me is the reason I love New Hampshire, and the trump card is it has all three. It has the ocean, the mountains, and the lakes. And that's what we all want. Now, I used to want to live on the ocean. I have pedaled taking the entire coast of New Hampshire on my bike, okay?
All 17 miles of it. Steve, thank you very much for calling. I'm not putting him down. I'm just saying it's a small coastline. You know, Rick Broussard, this is, you know, we started talking about like, okay, Maine has the coast and Vermont has the pretty scenery and Massachusetts has all that cool revolutionary red coat Minuteman history. And New Hampshire is a little bit more sort of here and there. But Steve is saying that's the strength, is the diversity.
Yeah. In fact, I would add to his list of the unique things we have is we also have a short border on a foreign country, and which is it's not one of the things that we note ourselves for a lot, but we're juxtapositioned to Canada is an important thing. And not only do we have the shortest stretch of seacoast, we have the shortest international boundary. And so I think that he's right. It's the variety. You could say that New Hampshire is kind of the place where you make your own adventure because you've got this palette of things from which we're not already packaged and marketed for people. You come here and you figure it out.
Figure it out yourself.
Yep.
And that gets to, which I will ask you guys after a break, New Hampshire's relatively new tourism slogan, live free and fill in the blank. We'll talk about that. I also want to hear from our listeners what they think about that. Maybe our slogan should be New Hampshire, we've got it all. Just an idea. But we'll talk about live free and fill in the blank in a moment and take a lot more of your calls. Join us 1-800-892-6477, whether it's lakes, mountains, politics, tax-free shopping, or those big liquor stores. Give us a call. Tell us why you come to the Granite State. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, what's the New Hampshire brand? What's our image? What draws people here? And how do we compare to other New England states? We invite you to join us on this, 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. Our guests for the hour are Jamie Trowbridge, President and CEO of Yankee Publishing, Inc., Rick Broussard, editor of New Hampshire Magazine, and Jeff Feingold, editor of New Hampshire Business Review. And gentlemen, let's go right back to our listeners and go next to Steve in Lebanon. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. I just have a brief observation. I with my wife, own and manage Poverty Lane Orchards and Farnham Hill Ciders in Lebanon, and we spend a fair bit of time in New York and Chicago and other places pitching our cider. My observation is that New Hampshire's a state, I don't know, Rhode Island's a state, Vermont is a brand, for what it's worth.
What do you mean by that, Stephen?
What I mean by that is that, just as one of the gentlemen said, nobody knows what New Hampshire is. We, in fact, our in other New England states, the signs by our ciders and stores say imported from New Hampshire, which, I mean, we're trying to make a bit of a point there.
But, right.
I mean, people just don't, people elsewhere have no clue. I mean, all of the Northeast is Vermont.
Is that a problem, Stephen?
Perhaps, well, yeah, you know, our cider's pretty good.
So but, you'd like it, the New Hampshire brand, to have a little more cachet, is that?
I, with all due respect to Vermont, I'm very glad I'm from the place I'm from. We're not proud of every last detail about New Hampshire, but, I don't wish we were more like Vermont or that we've gotten to slightly enjoy saying, no, let me tell you about New Hampshire.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Steve. It's really good to hear from him, Jeff Feingold, because he's saying, you know, love being here, obviously. But the branding issue.
I think that's really – it's a really good point. And first of all, I want to say his cider really is good. But it's really an interesting thing because New Hampshire does not have a brand. You know, we have we've had attempts to have tourism promotion. We're doing the Live Free Anne, as you mentioned.
Yeah, which we'll definitely talk about.
And it's not – Vermont and also Maine to a large extent have this image that New Hampshire doesn't have where people say – Vermont. They have an idea in the head of Vermont, whether it's cows or greens or, you know, green grass or whatever, but they have an idea. They don't have an idea of what New Hampshire is necessarily. And as Rick said, maybe that's a good thing, but it is not the kind of brand that you think. You can't just say, I'm just from New Hampshire. This product is from New Hampshire, and they have this image of it being this wholesome, natural thing. They don't necessarily think of it that way. They think about stuff from Vermont that way.
Let's take another call. Thank you, Stephen, for that one. Bob's in Moultonboro. Hi, Bob. Go ahead, you're in the exchange. Welcome.
I'm going to be sort of a negative person here. Essentially, I practiced law here for 35 years, and I've loved this state since I was a kid. But we spend our winters now down in Charleston, South Carolina, and I want to tell you that the image they have down there of this state is live free or die, and they don't mean it in a kind of gentle, accepting way. They think it's like the stars and bars.
They think it's like the stars and bars, even though you're in South Carolina.
Exactly. When I mentioned I'm from New Hampshire, those who recognize the state at all think of us as being a kind of live free or die state. In other words, a libertarian kind of don't like the federal government type of thing. It's not a very attractive image.
Okay. Well, Bob, thank you for calling in. What about the political image of New Hampshire? I'm going to turn to you first, Rick Broussard, and then got some Facebook comments from folks who actually love the political image. But go ahead.
You know, the image of New Hampshire that he's describing reminds me of – and it's probably an apocryphal story of I don't even know if the Vikings had anything to do with it, but the naming of Greenland and Iceland. You've probably heard this, where the assumption was that Greenland, oh, you go there, it's beautiful and green, and then Iceland, oh, void, there's a chunk of ice. And Iceland was this beautiful place, and Greenland was a chunk of ice. And in many ways, I think New Hampshire has kept up a kind of a shield against that kind – and the live free or die thing. Anybody who comes here knows that we're not just that. We're that too, but we're a variety of wonderful, you know, comforting and inviting and involving things. We're not an arm's length state. We welcome people aggressively once they get here. But you got to want to come. You got to kind of know that the secret to come.
And what is the secret?
Well, I think that's the operating question. What is New Hampshire's secret? You know, when I first started doing reporting for the Bow Times, it was my first real job here, and I went to a town meeting in Dunbarton. I saw bumper stickers that said, "Keep Dunbarton a secret." And I went, "What? Why would they want to keep Dunbarton a secret?" Well, if you've lived in Dunbarton for a while, you learn. It's because they don't want it to change.
It's beautiful.
They want it just like it is. And I think there is an aversion to change in New Hampshire, not change in the sense of, you know, getting more prosperous or whatever, but change in the sense of losing one's character. And that does happen when you succeed. If you succeed well enough, it makes a fundamental change in you, and you become a brand rather than a place, a state, as was said earlier.
Well, Bob, good to hear from you. And there are probably people who are turned off by that image, but I've got some Facebook comments from people who love it. Kelly says, we asked on our Facebook page, what's your favorite thing about the Granite State? Kelly says, Spirit of Freedom and Tolerance, Think, Live Free or Die. Taylor says, in a world where everything seems to be the same no matter where you go, it's refreshing that these three states, meaning Maine and Vermont and New Hampshire, each offer very separate and distinct experiences. They're all great states, and we're lucky to live here. Erin says she likes cheaper cigs and booze. Peter says he likes easy access to guns, no income or sales tax. Fred is another vote for cheap booze and cigarettes. And Juliana says it's people, hands down the friendliest folks I've ever met. So, Bob, thank you again for the call, and thank you all for those Facebook comments. What do you think, Jamie? Do you guys write about sort of the political image of the different New England states and how they draw people or, in some instances, according to Bob, repel people?
Well, we don't write directly about that, but, it comes out because we're writing about the character and the culture of New England. I do think that one of your Facebook commenters there really hit on something with this spirit of freedom. When you look at our slogan, Live Free or Die, you can think of it the way the caller from South Carolina or mentioned South Carolina as, complete libertarian. But you can also look at the independent spirit of New Hampshire. And I think that's really what the Department of Travel and Tourism is trying to get at when they do their Live Free slogan. It's like, you know what? We have this on our license plates. People driving around the country might know us as Live Free or Die. Let's take this, at least let's take the front half of this.
The death part is so inviting, but yeah.
Let's take the front half of this and use it to represent the independent spirit of the state, which really does translate, I believe, to the visitor experience, whether it be the ability to set off fireworks or the tax-free shopping.
Cheap booze and cigarettes.
Cheap booze and cigarettes. It's like, you can come here and as Rick said, you can make your own adventure. We have it all. But what really ties it all together is this independent spirit. And that's what I think they're trying to get at with Live Free. I really do support the campaign.
Well, I wanted to ask you all that. So I'll start with you, Jamie. Again, as I opened up the show saying that a couple years ago, New Hampshire switched from something sort of general, like you're going to love it here, to this Live Free and fill in the blank. And at the time, some people said, that's so vague. What do you mean fill in the blank? But a couple years out, how do you think it's working?
Well, first of all, I think they're going to use Live Free in a number of ways, not just always with an and. Like I have their ad here in the May issue of Yankee is Live Free and Relax. And there's this beautiful lake scene with his family around a fire on a dock.
It's absolutely gorgeous, like, yeah,
I'd like to do that. But the ski areas are using Live Free and Ski. Hampton Beach is using it. All these other different people are taking it. And so it's clever in the sense that the state's marketing budget only goes so far. And this is a way for them to bring in industry members and have them represent the brand, too, because you just don't create a brand overnight. It's going to take some time.
Yeah. And it's interesting. And again, given the varied character, Jeff Feingold, of New Hampshire's tourism draw, more varied than the neighboring states, as we talked about, maybe that's the only slogan that works.
Well, I have to say, to me, the Live Free or Die slogan cuts both ways because there is this inherent crankiness about it, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but with the example from Steve or Bob called earlier about the impression that down in Charleston, South Carolina, people have of New Hampshire, I think that's true in many places around the country. They look at the slogan, what's wrong with those people? They want me to die or whatever, whatever the impression is. But you might as well embrace – it's also a strength of New Hampshire because, as Jamie has said, it reflects this libertarian, this streak in New Hampshire where you live and let live. You can do what you want. That's the great characteristic of New Hampshire is, people basically leave you alone. They let you do what you want to do. There's not, you don't feel this heavy hand of either government or just, your neighbors worrying about whether you're hanging your laundry in your backyard or something. But it is something that people nationally, sometimes when they write about New Hampshire, especially every 4 years with the primary, they do kind of look at it as saying, what's wrong with those people with that slogan? If you think about it, originally, the first slogan on New Hampshire's license plates was scenic.
Right.
And then they came up with Live Free or Die, and there was a political reason for putting Live Free or Die on the license plate many years ago that involved a newspaper in New Hampshire. We don't have to talk about it right now, but it was a big effort to put that on the license plate and get rid of scenics.
So the union leader was behind that push.
Yes, I believe it was William Loeb and the whole campaign to get this on the license plate.
Well, it's memorable, much more memorable than scenic.
Oh, yeah, well, absolutely. I'm saying, you just embrace, you have to embrace this idea.
Any
this is what people
can
think
claim
of us.
To be scenic,
no,
right?
Absolutely. No, seriously.
Everybody
true.
Says they're scenic.
It's true. Maybe, except maybe Kansas.
I have a cousin who lives in Kansas. She says it's scenic. Go ahead, okay. Rick Broussard.
Well, we were the Switzerland of America for a while, too, as I recall. That was a slogan, a marketing slogan for New Hampshire. And, I've been around long enough. I was on the New Hampshire Made Board. And New Hampshire Made is an organization that promotes, it tries to brand locally made products and services.
Like Stephen, our cider maker, who called in earlier.
I'm sure he is a member. If not, Stephen, you should be. And you do have great cider, by the way. But the earliest effort they came up with for a brand was New Hampshire. We have a story to tell. And the idea was that each product would have its own little blurb of a story on their tag, and it was like an open book.
I remember that.
Well, and it was an early version of Live Free, and it was a fill in the blank brand, and so it's almost like that is what we got. We did a story in the magazine recently on our role in developing tourism, and we made the argument, which I think is you can substantiate to a degree, that New Hampshire invented modern American tourism, because we were the place where you got away from the smoky cities and everything. You went up the coast and everything, but coasts have always been relatively expensive or inaccessible or whatever. There were these roads that had been built in colonial times that led you right up into the White Mountains, right? By Governor Wentworth back in the 1700s built a road from Portsmouth to his estate on Lake Winnipesaukee, or actually at Wolfboro. And that's why Wolfboro is now known as the oldest tourist resort in America, because there was this nice little avenue to get right up to where he had built his mansion.
Okay, I didn't know that. I knew Wolfboro sort of made that claim, but I didn't know why. So thank you, Governor Wentworth.
And then the White Mountains lured artists in who did what was the equivalent back then, I guess, of selfies or of snapshots. They did these lovely paintings. The White Mountain artists illustrated these majestic and amazing landscapes, and people wanted to go see them. And so suddenly and also the world just changed to where you could afford to take a jaunt. There was free time. And so New Hampshire was very integral in the development of the whole concept of tourism. But for some reason, we don't get any credit for that. So
whole families would get on the train from Boston and go up to the White Mountains
and just stay there for the
month. Yeah. And Dad would come down and work during the week and then join the family on the weekends and so forth.
Or people would go up to Bethlehem to get away from the pollen. It was to get away from things. People came to New Hampshire to get away.
Let's go back to our callers. And Ken is joining us from Antrim. Go ahead, Ken. You're on the Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Well, years ago, there was a state case about the license plate and the logo Live Free or Die. A man taped over the die part because he didn't believe in it. And he was harassed and pulled over for defacing the license plate. And it went to the, and they ended up finding that you could do that. It was okay. So I changed mine to Live Free or Try. And I figured that might be a good slogan.
You changed your license plate? Did you change it with a Sharpie? Or what'd you do there, Ken? How'd you do that?
Exactly. The man taped it over the die part. I just taped it over, and then with a green Sharpie, wrote Try.
All right. Well, Ken, thank you very much for calling in. Jamie?
Maybe the state should, for travel and tourism, should just put Live Free and on the license plate, and everyone can fill in their own thing.
Right, with erasable marker in case they change their mind.
Problematic last word.
A couple more Facebook comments, gentlemen, and then a lot more callers. Dan says, the total economic impact of hunting-related activities on New Hampshire's economy. Retail sales, 86,000. Wages, salaries, 30, there's a lot of numbers here. Anyway, retail sales, salaries and wages, jobs, fuel taxes, federal income taxes, and Dan says that's just hunting. Fishing brings in about as much as hunting, so double those figures. So there's Dan saying, don't forget the hunting and fishing, Jeff Feingold.
That's a very important part of that tourism economy we're talking about. A lot of people come up to New Hampshire to hunt and fish, and I'm not quite sure what those numbers are, but I know it's very substantial, and there's a whole industry around it of attracting people hunting and fishing, whether it's selling the guns and the bait and all that stuff, and people being guides, and it's a big deal.
Yeah, Jamie.
Well, I would just say another thing along those lines now is Ride the Wilds in the North Country, where they have 1,000 miles of interconnected trails for off-road vehicles, and people are coming from
ATVs.
Coming from all over the world to ride there because it's just not something you can do in many other places.
Actually, we had a story in our paper about it, and it's starting to even have an effect on Berlin and surrounding communities because there's a sense that there's some businesses that are cropping up to cater to these new visitors. It could be a really substantial shot in the arm for that area.
Let's take another call, and this is Peter calling in from Las Vegas. Hi, Peter, all the way from Vegas.
I am, Laura. I'm a longtime resident of the Lakes region for 20 years. I actually moved from Toronto, Canada, to buy business out of bankruptcy, and I remember the lawyers that I dealt with in Manchester saying, what's a nice young man coming to a state like this that has such a bad economy? Now, this was 1990, and I had no idea how beautiful, how wonderful this state is, or New Hampshire is. It just, I'd never heard of Lake Winnipesaukee, and I rolled in on a Sunday night to look at this business, and even McDonald's was closed at 9 o'clock in Laconia. I thought, it was pouring rain. And the next morning, I woke up, it was a beautiful sunny day, and I drove around, I went, wow, there is such diversity in that state. It's so beautiful. I'll always call it my home.
So why did you move to Vegas? It's pretty dry out there, and with all due respect, Peter, matter of taste. Let me just say that I was in Las Vegas 2 years ago and was underwhelmed. Go ahead.
That's fine. You know, people think of Las Vegas as the Strip. There's a real city here, and it's surrounded by mountains, and there's a huge lake, which I consider kind of like Lake Winnipesaukee.
Okay,
lake
now see, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So we have boating, and actually outside of Las Vegas, we have ski resorts. But I was just so, the diversity from, you know, I'll call Boston to the south. You can go to the city if you want it. To Pittsburgh, I always love going to North Conway. I skied at Gunstock. I've skied many places. You stand at the top of Gunstock and look across the lake in the winter. It's gorgeous.
Oh, Peter, I got to cut you off there. Thank you so much for calling in. It's great to hear from you. Good luck out there in Las Vegas. We'll talk more in just a moment. This is The Exchange. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, what's the New Hampshire image or brand? What draws people to visit the Granite State? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. If you're a Granite Stater yourself, where do you go in the Granite State? If you're a visitor here right now or a relative newcomer, what draws you to New Hampshire? How do you think the rest of the country perceives the Granite State? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. We've heard some great comments from our listeners already. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. And Rick Broussard, before I go back to our listeners, I did want to ask you this, and others can jump in too if you want. Jeff Feingold mentioned the growing popularity of ATVs, all-terrain vehicles, in the North Country. Jamie mentioned there's a new trail up there and lots of economic development around that. I know folks, though, in the new North Country who are less happy to see these sort of big, noisy machines. Yeah. Maybe some smells from the gasoline coming through. So we've always had this clash of sort of motorized versus non-motorized recreation in New Hampshire. You know, kayakers versus jet skiers.
There's room for everyone. And don't tell the people in Berlin that you have any kind of objection to they just made their streets friendly to ATVs. So essentially you can drive your snowmobile downtown or your four-wheel vehicle. And largely that's because they're so excited about Ride the Wilds and other efforts to, you know, really just take advantage of what they've got for monetary gain, which is exactly what has always happened in New Hampshire. And somehow we've maintained that balance. We have, you know, the whole state was forested and got completely deforested, and now it's one of the most forested states in the world again. We have a very practical relationship with enterprise. And it just tends to work out, I think, because, you know, practical realities tend to be the right way to go.
Well, that's one of the first things that you talked about this hour is that New Hampshire's always been kind of practical. We'll just go with what's working for us. Go ahead, Jeff.
If you think about it, you know, we've had snowmobiles in New Hampshire since the beginning because they were invented in New Hampshire. I guess it was invented in like 1913 or 14 by a Ford dealer in Ossipee.
I did not know that.
You know, so we've been complaining about the motorized vehicles for a longer time than just recently. No, but that's also a very big business. People travel. I know people who travel every year. They drive all the way up to Pittsburgh or around that area just driving on their snowmobiles.
It's a culture. And speaking of non-PC games that were invented here, you know, paintball was invented in New Hampshire. And we have some of the largest paintball, fields in the world here, in the country anyway. Where you can go out and pretend to kill your friends.
So. Jamie, have you guys tackled this in Yankee Magazine, this sort of culture clash between, kayakers and jet skiers, hikers and ATVers?
Over and over. The use of the natural resource for recreation and, for that matter, for anything else is always going to run into conflict with residents and people who want to use it differently. I would just say in the North Country that this really is in its infancy, this new program with Ride the Wilds. And if you think of, the wars between the snowmobilers and the cross-country skiers in the 70s, you know, that all worked out. There's no more cutting of fences. The snowmobiles, you know, and the cross-country people, they can share the same trail or something like that. And I don't want to sound Pollyannish about it, but I just think it's early. And the reason I think it's so exciting for the North Country is, as you all know very well, that they really need economic development in the North Country. And if they're going to do tourism development in the North Country, remember that there's a lot of hunting and fishing and lakes and mountains that you got to drive by before you get up there. And so this is something they have that is worth driving up there for. You can drive right by the White Mountains to do this because you can't do this in the White Mountains.
Yeah. Well, and go ahead, Jeff.
I was just going to say that it's important to remember that the economic situation in the North Country, it's not through the fault of the people of the North Country. It's, you know, it's international, all these international of ramifications. And tourism is the one solid remaining industry up there. And they really are trying to boost it as much as they possibly can. I mean, it's not – there's obviously efforts to bring more industry and other kinds of jobs. But right now, tourism is a great hope for the economic development of the North Country right now.
Let's go back to our listeners. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let's go to Lucy in Keene. Hi, Lucy. Go ahead. You're in the exchange.
Hi. I'm on my speakerphone. Is that a problem?
Go ahead. No, it's fine, Lucy.
Okay. I was just listening to what you were saying and thinking about how diverse the regions are in New Hampshire and how important branding is for those regions. I live in an area that's rich with cultural aspects and artists, of which I am one. And are you hearing my voice echo?
Go ahead, Lucy. You're talking about cultural attractions in the Keene area.
Yeah, and there's a group in Keene, Art the Lodge, that is really working on tourism and finding a brand for our area that focuses more on cultural tourism, which I think is wonderful, tying businesses to the arts. And I really want to improve the image of New Hampshire, which I think is brought out.
Okay, now, Lucy, you are fading out, and I do apologize for cutting you off there. Jamie, I know there are a lot of efforts to boost cultural tourism. What do you think? And then I have another question for you.
Yeah, in the Monadnock region right now, I'm actually a member of a task force that's looking to brand the Monadnock region around arts and culture. And really what we think is distinctive about the Monadnock region, which, by the way, has some of the same challenges as the North Country when it comes to tourism.
A little bit tucked away there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as far away, but it's still off the beaten path.
Well, and if you get stuck behind a truck on Route 9, speaking from personal experience. Yeah.
If you get stuck behind a truck,
so, it takes you a while to get there.
So, you know, what we're talking about is really the juxtaposition of the rural landscape and the world-class arts. I mean, there are amazing arts in the Monadnock region, the Monadnock Music, Apple Hill, the Colonial Theater, the Peterborough Players, could go on and on. And each of those arts institutions by themselves doesn't hold up to what's in New York, but the environment is really quite extraordinary.
So you get the arts in that natural environment.
And it's a little bit making it kind of comparable to how the Berkshires have promoted themselves.
Gotcha.
And really trying to promote the destination in that regard.
So not to be mean, nobody get mad at me, but when I think culture, you know, museums, music, Jamie, I'm going to go to Boston. If I'm going to come to New Hampshire for swimming and boating and hiking and relaxing on the porch. But culture,
you're right, not on.
The first thing that comes to mind.
You're right on. I mean, we can't maintain that what we have in the Monadnock region is better than what's in Boston. But some of it's as good as what's in Boston. And if you want to enjoy a summer weekend out in the country and take in a Monadnock music concert, you can't do that in Boston.
Fresh air, no crowds leaving that concert like you would have in Boston.
Talk about it sort of being the intersection of winding roads and world-class culture is sort of the way we're putting it.
Well, Lucy, great to hear from you. Go ahead, Jeff.
I know in New London, we have people come to visit New London. They spend days, weeks there and, you know, in the summer. And one of the big attractions is the New London Bar and Playhouse has been there for many, many years. And people go to see a play. Mm-hmm. It's an added attraction to coming to an area.
Right. There's several of the at least three contenders for oldest summer theater in the country, and the Barn is one of them, and the Peterborough Players is another one, and then the other is the Barnstormers, and then way up in Whitefield, there's theater all over the state, and it has exactly that quality. You're up here, you're there to ski or to do whatever, and hey, there's a little theater. Let's go see it. And it turns out they have really great theater. They have New York actors that they go and they audition every year. They bring them up. They dorm them there, and
they want to get out of the city too for the summer. Absolutely. It's a nice gig for them.
Right. It's a great gig. It's a chance for them to develop their skills and in a wonderful place. I mean, it's really like the state has this kind of cradle for culture. And it supports it and it nourishes it. But you're right. Then once they get good, they move to Boston, you know, or to New York. I mean, that's the, you know, the circle of culture.
All right. Lucy, again, thank you for bringing that up. And let's go to Jonathan in Manchester. Hey, Jonathan, you're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
First, I'll just say I love New Hampshire because I'm sure I'll get a few disgruntled responses. I'm an old New Hampshireite. Came back here to actually contribute to the culture of the state after living 20 years in the U.S. And, you know, the state does hemorrhage a lot of talent. But I think in order to improve a place, you guys are scraping to find what the image of New Hampshire is. And that shows a problem in vision for the state. I mean, I know my feeling is that there's not a lot of vision for the state. Like you said, people know what to expect when they get to Vermont, Maine, and Massachusetts. And I think the problem is that we're in denial of what the real image is, and it's going to take some scrubbing up. And that is, like, the incident last year with the racist sheriff saying the stuff about Obama, the small-minded sort of, I've been told that the state, it looks selfish to people from outside. It's very selfish in the free state or movement or people that don't want to contribute taxes. We used to have extraordinary education in this state just 20, 25 years ago. I mean, and it's not there. We have a huge drug problem. We've got an exodus of youth. You know, it's problematic for the state. The best thing going for the state is the nature. So God bless that we held on to that and we built upon that. But I think until we realize the problems and it takes kind of vision. Manchester is a beautiful city physically, and it is a disaster culturally. And,
Jonathan,
know,
let me ask you a quick question. Yeah. No, I'm glad to hear from you. Let me ask you real quick, because we had a caller who called earlier, too, Bob, saying that, you know, our reputation, he felt, was of sort of, I don't know, mean-spirited, if I could put it that way. And that seems to be what you're saying.
I totally agree with that.
But we've got a bunch of Facebook comments from people. I'm not going to read all of them. People who say they love that sort of live free or die, you know, low tax and so forth environment.
Well, you know, I can just look at that as, I mean, I know because historically where my family was, I know where it was before William Loeb became the editor of the space and afterwards. I mean, well, that's a long time ago, Loeb.
But that is not necessarily the character of the state. You guys are talking about those old cultural institutions and the arts institutions and the tourism. That was the 1920s and 30s in the state.
Okay.
It was a wonderful state. So we killed a lot of this. I mean, a lot of people love that idea of this because they can come up here and sit on their money. But what happens to the young people who grow up here? They leave. That's all I have to say for the answer for that.
Well, and Jonathan, good to hear from you. And themes that we have covered on many, many, many exchange programs and definitely will. In fact, tomorrow we're going to look at the mental health system. So thank you for that call, Jonathan, very much. And let's go to Jim in Plymouth. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Hi there, Laura. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a New York transplant. I came here back in 1987, and I wasn't sure what the heck I was going to find because, as some people said already, New Hampshire, what the heck is up there? And I have to tell you, I have no plans on leaving. My wife would like to go back to New York. No way for me because there's such a slower pace here. In New York, it's all rush, rush, rush. Let's get there as soon as possible. But in New Hampshire, it's take your time. You're going to get there eventually. I also love the richness of the seasons. There's always something going on each season. I mean, sure, you got mud season, but hey, you know, a little mud here and there is not going to hurt you. And as somebody else already said, of the diversity of the state, I mean, you've got so many different types of areas. The sea coast, you got the mountains here where I live. You know, a little farther north, you have, you know, the Colebrook, and that it's totally different. So who could not love this state? It's a wonderful state.
So what are you going to do, Jim? You going to stay?
Definitely going to stay. I've been here since 87, and I plan to stay forever.
All right. Thank you very much for calling in. We appreciate it. You know, you're a transplant from New York, Jeff.
Brooklyn,
did
New
you
York.
Notice that sort of slower pace? And do you think that's still the case, or have we speeded up recently with the rest of the world?
Well, actually, it's, you know, when I start, I have a commute from New London to Manchester every day, and I've noticed there's a lot more traffic. It's really a pain. You have to wait about three more minutes to get on out of my driveway or something. Maybe not three, but no, it is much slower paced than New York. I mean, I don't think it is a faster paced city in the world, really, because these people are always just moving really fast and getting someplace, and there's no comparison. I mean, and, you know, and I could look out my window and see Mount Kearsarge, and as opposed to the neighbor, you know, looking through the neighbor's window or something in Brooklyn. I mean, I love Brooklyn, but, you know, it's just a different world.
Well, Jonathan, our earlier caller, talked about the politics of the state, and it's a turn off for him. And then I shared some Facebook comments that it's a turn on for other people. But since we're in the midst of a pretty hot New Hampshire primary, gentlemen, I wanted to tell you a little story. I met someone about a year ago who moved here from Berkeley, California, and I said, Berkeley, California, Concord, New Hampshire. Wow, that's a big lifestyle change. Huge. Why did you guys do that? And she said, my husband is a political junkie and he loved the New Hampshire primary. Rick Broussard, he loved the idea that he could rub shoulders with these candidates. How much is that sort of person-to-person political culture a draw for some folks?
Well, I mean, if you just think of it in terms of the fact that it's sort of the heartbeat of the state. I mean, we every 4 years since it's really 100 years now since this was a concept that sort of came into fruition. But for the last 50 years or so, it's been such a huge piece of the American political system that it's really like the pulse of the national political being. And so every 4 years it pumps out, you know, another roster of candidates in various order, and people definitely come to attach to that. And of course, as you know, if you live here, it never ends. I mean, you know, it seems to rise in frequency and then diminish for a while. So yeah, this is a very strong draw for the political junkie.
I do think also that the primary plays a role in our positive and negative image that we have around the country.
That's a good point, the way national reporters characterize
yes,
us. Go ahead.
It really is. I mean, you know, if you think about it, especially nowadays, in the last several presidential cycles, as they say, it's been more concentrated in southern New Hampshire, the coverage. So it's not, you know, we're not really getting the images that we used to get of people going, the reporters traveling up to, you know, up to the White Mountains or going over to the Monadnock region as much.
Remember when Newt Gingrich tried to find a moose?
A bunch of years ago.
There's all kinds of great
images of that kind. You know, people ice fishing. You know,
right.
I think I've seen pictures of Walter Mondale ice fishing, things like that. You don't see that as much anymore because there's more flybys and they concentrate
right,
more on
faster,
using the media
quicker,
and all that.
Yep. Sure. Jamie, I can see you want to jump in.
Oh, no, not
national
a big deal.
Media,
well,
how they portray New Hampshire.
The primary.
January, you know, they're featuring us here in the winter. A lot of people's national image of New Hampshire is some reporter standing out in a snowbank.
That's true.
So the primary doesn't help us that way from a tourism standpoint.
Right. I have heard people say, I'm sure it's pretty in the summer, but those winters. And after last winter, I have to say, maybe they're right. Gentlemen, this has been great. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
Great to be here.
Thanks, Laura.
That's Jeff Feingold, editor of New Hampshire Business Review, Rick Broussard, editor of New Hampshire Magazine, and Jamie Trowbridge, president and CEO of Yankee Publishing, Inc. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Knoy.